game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan at Sportsnet590.ca.
This is a very packed edition of Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This week, MLB The Show 13 and Tomb Raider are finally here. We'll have our reviews. We dive deep into the return of Kratos in God of War Ascension, and we talk about our visit to an awesome new exhibit that takes a look through video game history.
Have you got game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Momin Qureshi, Brian Calhoun, and Christine Chubb with me back for another week of video game goodness. We have a lot to talk about in this show. Later on, we'll talk about a little God of War Ascension. We went to the Science Center this week and checked out something that is totally awesome. You're going to want to tune in for that because that's something you definitely want to hear about. But to get us started, no secret we're a sports station and one of the most anticipated games of the year around this part.
No secret we're a sports station.
By the way.
Especially since I said Sportsnet 590 The Fan like 30 seconds ago. But the game I'm talking about.
You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's a secret.
You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The game I'm talking about, of course, is MLB The Show 13, featuring none other than Joey Bats 19, better known as Jose Bautista, in the red jersey on the cover.
For the second time.
Yes, for the second time on the cover, not always in the red jersey, but he is back on there with the highly hyped Jays coming into this season. Unfortunately, none of the three of us had a chance to play it, but you know, we thought last year we had our good friend Francisco and Andrade come on to review it. He did a pretty good job, so he said, you know what? Let's bring him back. Let's bring him back, and he can review this year. So on the line with us is Francisco Andrade. Cisco, what's up?
Hello, Momin. How's it going, buddy? Thanks for having me on again.
Good. Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you. And I like that you said hi to only me and not to Brian and Christine. Forget those two.
I was just waiting to say hello to them. That's all.
Hello.
You don't need to talk to those two. It's fine.
Brian, what's going on?
Not much. Just doing a little radio show. I hear that you've been playing a video game that a lot of our listeners would enjoy. What do you think of MLB The Show right now?
Oh, well, you know what? It's more standard sim baseball goodness from MLB 13 The Show. It is just, if you're a baseball fan in any capacity, it's the game you got to go for. It's the game you got to have. It is a phenomenal baseball sim.
Do you think there's any real difference from last year's game compared to this one?
There's minor tweaks, but the ones that are there are big ones. The big one for me was the fielding is much more improved. In previous games, you just have to get in a general direction of where the ball is going, and you have to get in that area, and the AI would automatically catch the ball, and then you would correspond with whatever button and base you want to throw to, and it would automatically do that too. This year, however, it depends on the route that you take to the ball and how the ball bounces off the dirt or the mound, how cleanly you pick it up. From there, a meter appears, which is called a throwing meter, and you have to hold it down, and the idea is to stop it in a green accuracy zone. And that will determine the power and accuracy of your throws. So it makes errors much more realistic and a challenge and consequence towards fielding, which is amazing.
See, now the thing for me always is in games, I want realism, but I don't want completely realistic. That's just the way I look at it, where I don't want it to be 100% like the game, but just as much as possible, but still be a video game. Where does that fall in for you? I mean, has it crossed the line, or is it still a really good sim that you're enjoying?
It is always, I find that the MLB 13, or just the show series, has always been catered to very baseball purists, and it's very sim. However, this year they did add a beginner mode, which helps a lot for newcomers. What it does is introduce you to the basics of hitting and pitching. So if you're in this mode, the pitcher will only throw you fastballs right down the middle, so you can focus on just trying to make contact with the ball and having a good swing at it. And from then, once your timing has improved and you're hitting balls properly, it'll start throwing you the odd curveball here. So introducing you to off-speed pitches and really just getting you to know the gradual breaks of pitches and velocities in your timing. So that helps a lot, I find.
All right, so break some more stuff down for us. What did you like about the game? What didn't you like?
The presentation is always fantastic. I play it in broadcast mode, which offers a lot of different angles and camera shots, and how it really just blurs the line between game and real baseball. Like, I mean, oftentimes when I'm playing a game, people ask me, are you watching a real game? Because it really is that realistic. It'll show frustrated managers in the dugout talking to players about bad plays or players in the outfield stretching during an activity. It's all just blurred really nicely, and it just feels like you're watching and playing real baseball. It's fantastic.
How's the road to the show mode this year?
The road to the show mode is pretty much basically the exact same thing. You create your player, and you start in the minor league system and work your way all the way up to the big leagues. and your manager gives you certain objectives. For example, you'll be pinch hitting for someone in the fifth inning, and then there'll be a runner at second base, and your objective is to score that runner. So you obviously have to get at least a single. And when you, if you do accomplish that, then you'll get these experience points, which you can put towards whatever contact with right-handed pitchers or left-handed pitchers, power, throwing accuracy, and differences. And but the main thing is that the camera angles have been different on that one as well. Before, it was a little complex when you were base running because you couldn't really see the ball in the outfield, whether it dropped or not. This time, the camera pans around, so you have a more open view of the field. And along with fielding as well, the camera now comes behind you instead of a top view of you, which it makes it more realistic, like if you're actually out in the outfield trying to track a fly ball and get under it. It's fantastic.
We're talking to Francisco Andrade. He's reviewing MLB The Show 13 for us. All right, so wrap it up for us then. It sounds like you're loving it, but numerically out of 10, what do you say for MLB The Show 13?
It's a series standard 9 out of 10. They do everything right. They always up the game from year to year with little minor tweaks. This year, it's the fielding. It's much improved. 9 out of 10 is what I give it.
Now, just something you said a second ago about being on the field and getting as close as you can without being on the field just made me think of the fact that you have been on the field during
That's
games
true.
As yeah, sort of a member of the ground crew before, as someone of that unique
perspective. Well, he's a current member of the grounds crew.
That's true, yes. I am a member of the Blue Jays grounds crew.
Well, as someone of that unique perspective, how does it look being on the field compared to playing the game?
And this is what I mean. This is why I tell you that it is so great. I mean, I actually sometimes even have to fill in for the ball boy when he's not able to play out there. So I actually get to throw on a uniform and go play catch with big league players, and I'm literally on the field. And the attention to detail that the game offers, it is phenomenal. Like, it is literally like you're standing on the field. And I've been there many times, so I'm glad to be able to say that you can recreate that through your PS3 and your television.
Very impressive. Francisco Andrade, buddy, gives it an MLB The Show 13 a 9 out of 10. Sounds like it's another stellar edition. Cisco, thanks very much, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Keep up the good work.
We go from the show to Tomb Raider. Lara Croft is back for another adventure. She's much younger this time. Christine and Brian, you guys played it. What do we think?
I think the first place we really have to start with is the marketing behind this game. Mm-hmm. A lot of interesting choices made by their marketing team to depict the game will be Lara in very dangerous situations and situations, in fact, a lot of people would feel uncomfortable discussing in public. And the realization I had about that while playing this game is that really you just have to take that entire aspect of the marketing and throw it out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is a much better game. Because I don't even think that this game lives up to what they were trying to do. Not to say this is a bad game, and we'll discuss it and why it's not a bad game in the next couple of minutes. But whatever they were trying to do, at least whatever they were trying to do in marketing speak, did not happen during this game. And if you just ignore all that, I think it's a much better game.
So let's talk about the game then. What was it like?
I really enjoyed it. This was my first Tomb Raider game, although I've seen other people play it before. I've never actually played it myself. So this was my first experience at the helm of Lara Croft. And wow, this game has a lot of action in it. Like, it is almost a nonstop action thrill ride, I guess, to say something horribly cliche.
You put that on a box there? Yeah, Christine Chubb got game.
There are sections in this game, and you know, Tomb Raider games in the past have been a lot about puzzle solving, mm-hmm. and exploring tombs and stuff like that, as a Tomb Raider would. But there are large parts of this game where it's just like, jump from this exploding building onto this other building, and then jump off it before it explodes. And you're literally just jumping in front of it. Explosion after explosion after explosion, kind of like they did in that movie 2012, where it's just everybody running away from these CG effects that were blowing everything up. That's kind of not the entire game, but large set pieces in the middle of the game.
It is a huge amount of the game. Like, really, I found going through the tombs and just the puzzle solving wasn't really that big of a part of the game at all. Like, it was kind of the thing that you did on the side, whereas there was tons of shooting, tons of jumping, tons of running around. And there were times where I was going through large sections of the game, and by the time I finally got to sit down at base camp, I was like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. Like, oh my gosh, I've just gone through so much. This island is crazy. I really did like it. I thought that I didn't have a lot of background on Lara Croft, so I thought a little bit more story evolution could have happened. But I mean, I'm sure people who are big fans of the franchise know all the stuff that I didn't know. So it would be very seamless for them. I liked the action. I really liked the fact that I didn't find a lot of glitches and lags in the game, which, especially in a game that was this fast-paced, it would have really taken it right out of it.
Very smooth going from one part of the game to the next, and by that I mean like going from this train to that train.
Mm-hmm.
Very seamless, no loading screens at all.
No, which is fantastic. Even going from cutscenes to gameplay was virtually seamless, where there were times I was like, wait, am I moving things? Am I not moving things? And really it was whether or not Laura was moving that I knew that it was game time, because I was like, oh, okay, now I'm watching something. Okay, now I'm doing it. Wait, now I'm watching and doing it. And even when there would be parts where you would read something, you know, you pick up a book, you could do other things while this was happening. It wasn't like, you know, the entire game stopped because she'd picked up a new trophy or she'd picked up a new token. You could still be doing stuff. You could be talking to people on the phone. You could be, like, it was really seamless. Everything was going on at the same time, which sometimes is hard because you'd be doing something where you'd be talking to one of your people on the island, and you'd walk into a room and suddenly there'd be bad guys there. It's like, oh, now I'm shooting. What's going on? Like, too many things happening at one time.
Yeah. Like you say, though, there's a strange focus on shooting for a Tomb Raider game. Now, not to say that the parts about climbing around a tomb are not there. They're just disguised as other things. Instead of climbing around a tomb, you'll climb around this like giant crane or this shanty town and stuff like that. So those parts are there. They're just disguised differently than they were a couple of decades ago when the first Tomb Raider came out.
Yeah, we should say really what this game is all about is that you're on a ship and the ship crashes. You're looking for this ancient civilization that nobody's seen in years and nobody knows exactly where it is. And your boat crashes and you find yourself on this island, and the island is just filled, it seems, with all of these kind of warrior people they have a bit of a cult, and the island seems to have a long and sordid history of bringing in sailors and plain people to the island and then just kind of destroying them, sacrificing them. So you have to run around and save your friends, and you have to try and find out what's going on. It's really an immersive kind of story. Like, the story is really the driving force of this game.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't really feel like the story matched up with what I was doing.
Really? I did.
Like, the story was a lot of Laura trying to learn how to sort of, like, be this person that has to take another life, because if she doesn't, then her life will end, and then feeling really bad about it. But then going back and mowing 100 people down and feeling bad about it and mowing 100 people down back and forth.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. It just seemed kind of weird. Like, the gameplay and story did not fit with each other's.
We're sort of in a time crunch on this episode of the show because we have so much to talk about. But if you guys were able to sort of put some final thoughts into it, what do we think about this new iteration of a younger Lara Croft in Tomb Raider?
The game looks beautiful. If you are here for climbing around, that part is still there. I didn't think there were as many puzzles as I would like, but there still are a few puzzles that some of them are really tricky to figure out. Game looks good. Voice acting's great. Character design's great. Overall, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Again, nice. Yeah, I would agree with Brian. It's really beautiful, and the seamless gameplay alone is a marvelous part of this. I thought the shooting mechanics were really good, especially because there was so much focus on it. I would have liked to have seen more puzzles, but I really liked it. The only downside I had was at times I found it was unnecessarily brutally violent, especially when she died. I was like, oh, that really didn't need to be that gory. But I really enjoyed it. I had a good time with it, and especially because for my first experience. And I'm going to give it an 8.5.
8.5 from Christine Chubb. Brian Calhoun gives it a 9. That's for the new Tomb Raider. Quick, in 10 seconds or less. Heard some people saying early runner for Game of the Year. Yes, no?
Maybe. We'll see. It's too early to say that.
No, I think there are too many conflicting ideas in that game for it to be front runner.
Interesting. So that's Tomb Raider and MLB The Show 13. Coming up next, we're going to dive deep into Kratos' return in God of War Ascension. That's coming up on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back for segment 2 with Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun. I'm Omen Qureshi. If you are a fan of Kratos, you're in luck, because he's back on this Tuesday, also known as March the 12th. The new God of War comes out. It's called God of War Ascension. It's new, but it takes place in the past in the God of War universe because it's a prequel. And we wanted to find out all about it because this one has a lot of new features, including, for the first time ever, multiplayer. As such,
I thought you were going to say walking elephants.
That too.
Well, I should say bipedal, not just walking.
Bipedal elephants.
As opposed to all those elephants that don't walk. No,
as
bipedal
such,
elephants.
Calhoun, last week you and I went to this past week we went to a launch event for God of War Ascension, and we had a chance to speak to John Pelemarchuk, the lead environment artist for multiplayer and cinematics on God of War, and we said, listen, the big difference between this one is it takes place in the past. What gives?
Yes, that's correct. We wanted to show a different time of Kratos when he's, you know, earlier on in his life, when he's not so angry and bent up with rage, and you know, he plays differently, he looks different, he's more of like the younger aspiring Spartan before he's a general and everything, and so his moves, his combat ability and everything, he's not so sure of himself. It's a little toned down.
So, I mean, well, I can't imagine a less angry Kratos because he's so angry in the versions that we've all played. But let's talk about some of the differences. Can you maybe go into specifics as to how the actual gameplay and movement and stuff is different this time?
Well, he's definitely more fluid and his actions are, I guess, snappier, I would say. So we redid our animation system, and we have animation blending, and you know, we have a lot of technical stuff on the side. We also sped up the gameplay, so if you are a fan of, say, God of War 3, and you play this, you'll go, oh, it's faster, it's something feels different, and that's kind of that's tied in also just making it feel better, but also he's younger now, and so his moves aren't as strong, but you do more combos and things like that. So it's just an evolution.
And before we go any further, for those people who haven't been following this game and the development as close as we have, can we just sort of go back a little further into the specifics about what's going on with Kratos? I mean, you mentioned it's sort of a less angrier Kratos, but where is he in life? What is he doing? What's happening to him right now?
So this story is all about the way, you know, what happens if you break your oath to a god. And it really touches in on his family and who he is and where he comes from. So I don't want to necessarily go into specifics because just for spoilers, but you really get to see a different side of Kratos that we haven't seen. So you see more human interaction. He's not just, you know, going after the gods or things like we have done in the past. And it's really more of an adventure, too. I really like to compare it to something like an Indiana Jones adventure where you're going to scale across the whole world and really see him evolve into who we know him to be in past titles.
I don't know how much you can get into this, but obviously it's the story of Kratos is well known by the time you get to the end of God of War 3 with him and his daughter and all the stuff that happens. Do we get a bit more detail on that as we go through the story?
Yes, definitely. You do see his family. You know, you see his house. You see his wife, and you see those interactions, and it's much more intimate.
I know we've all seen the commercials, which are the one where the daughter's running up the hill and Kratos at the top, and then she turns in. It's a very powerful commercial, and we've got a lot of response about that. And what's interesting about that is that there's no gameplay footage in that commercial. It's just kind of live action, which I think tells a lot of the story, so it's very interesting.
And I guess the question then has to be, what was the priority for you guys going into development of this game? Action gameplay, which the franchise is known for, or story narrative?
Well, I think we kind of try to meld both of those, because it's really, I would define God of War as a cinematic experience. So when it comes to cinematics, you do have some action, and you also have the storytelling kind of melded together. So if anything, we wanted to just continue that and improve on what we had. You know, we had ideas at the end of the last game. We always have ideas that don't make it in. It's usually a time and budget thing. So we kind of shelve those ideas and we use them. We let them kind of stew for a couple years or a few years, and then, all right, we're ready to do this. We think we can pull it off. And that's kind of a lot of things in this game ended up being from that.
Talking to John Pelemarchuk about God of War Ascension. I know you said that some things are going to be different this time around with the different types of gameplay, and he's less angry. But obviously, one of the staples of God of War is the leveling up and all the different types of things that he can get. Are all those things back around this time?
Yes, and we took feedback from previous games where people said, oh, the sub-weapons, we don't really use them so much, or the magics, I build up my magic, I save it, and then I get to use it once. That system has completely been refined, so the magic now, it just builds up much quicker, and you can use it, you don't feel like, okay, I just spent it, I don't have it for 10 minutes or something like that. Also, the sub-weapons system, instead of having these different weapons that everyone always wanted to play with the blades, now we just have elements for the blades that are given to you from the gods. So, you know, you have Zeus, Ares, Poseidon, and Hades, and each of those gods gives you an element. On top of that, we have our world weapons, so you can pick up different weapons and use those throughout the game as well.
Now, up to this point, prequels in this franchise have all been handled on the PlayStation Portable. I've played both of those games, and I'm just wondering, if someone's played those games,
Will it tie into anything that I'm going to experience in this game?
I guess I'll have to wait and see that one. Sorry. I don't want to spoil too much.
Right. So one of the big things about this game is sort of what your involvement was, and that is there is multiplayer in this game. So maybe give us first a general walkthrough of what we can expect in multiplayer God of War.
Well, we looked at what God of War was as a franchise, and we kind of distilled that down and, you know, put it down to the essence. And key things make God of War feel like God of War. A locked camera. If you look at multiplayer games, not many have a locked camera where you can't control the camera. We specifically just give you what we feel is the ideal camera for the action. So we have a locked camera. We have the third-person gameplay, but it's melee gameplay. If you look at other multiplayer games, there's not many games that have melee gameplay, and there's a reason for that. It's the lag. It's hard to do lag when you're just swinging a melee weapon, because what if another guy swings at the same time? How do you calculate the lag? What if you've got 100 milliseconds, you know, a tenth of a second of lag? It's going to look weird. We spent a ton of time figuring that out, and we basically came up with a system where we can kind of hide the lag. So, you know, if your connection's reasonably good, you're not actually going to see any lag, and it's just going to feel right. And we're really proud of that. That's a huge, achievement for our studio, which is specifically, up till now, a single-player game studio. We didn't do any network play. So on the multiplayer side, though, we do have 8-player up to 4-on-4 multiplayer. We have different game modes. We have large levels, small levels, which are more like arena types. And, we're going to support it with continuing content coming out. One of the unique things we wanted to do just for the fans is when we release new maps and map packs in the future, we are going to just release those for free. Everyone's going to have those maps. We're not charging for those maps. They're going to be high-quality maps, big budget stuff, you know, coming out in the future. So, and it's for the fans.
Now, was it a difficult process being a studio that at this point has only worked on single-player games and for once, like, going and making that multiplayer aspect? Because as far as I understand from the outside, it's a slightly different beast from just making a single-player campaign. So how is it for you guys being inside the studio working on this multiplayer sort of aspect of the game for the first time?
It's really difficult because what you have when you have a single-player studio is you have a lot of guys that like to play single-player games, so you don't necessarily have multiplayer gamers. We have some multiplayer gamers within our team, and I think those people really stepped up to help the multiplayer development of our game. But even in a sense of us playtesting our own game, we weren't used to, you know, sitting down once or twice a week and like, okay, the whole studio, everyone has to play the game. And, you know, there'll be bugs and issues with the game, and early on in the development, it was really rough, and nobody wanted to play it. And eventually, you know, over refinement and everything, we finally get there. But just in terms of development, there's so many hard things to do, especially on the net code. And if you think about having 8 Kratoses, essentially, 8 of the Spartans multiplayer, when we finally got 8 guys able to run on the PS3, just in a box room with nothing in there, it was running at 10 frames a second. And we thought, how are we going to do this? We don't even know how to do this. And, you know, with years of optimizing the code and everything, finally we were able to pull it off. We went all in with our bet, thinking that we could pull it off, and we did. But it's been a super huge challenge. It's always with memory. PS3 is 7 years old at this point, and to look at what we're achieving on it, I think we're very happy with it.
We're talking to John Palomarchuk about God of War Ascension here on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And I don't mean to focus on multiplayer so much, as it will be an aspect of the game, but not the entire game. But it just seems like such a weird choice for you guys, considering you have such a pedigree with single-player action. I guess I just really want to know, you know, I've heard people talk about multiplayer before, but I've never really got a chance to ask anybody, why did you make that choice to have the multiplayer in the game in the first place?
Right. At the end of God of War 3, actually one of the developers, just kind of in his off time, got the game working locally so we could have a Kratos playing against a Kratos. So it's like player 1 versus player 2. And just hitting each other, we thought, there's some potential here. This is actually pretty cool. And then we thought, okay, it's never really been done. Melee combat's never really been done. And, you know, cinematic melee combat multiplayer and we went for a long time and tried to figure out what that would be, what God of War multiplayer would be, and in the end we realized that we have something kind of fresh here, something unique. It's not another sci-fi shooter that, you know, there's just like 20 of them that come out a year, so hopefully it gives gamers an experience that they haven't enjoyed before, and they just remember that, and maybe, you know, other titles in the future, not necessarily God of War, just like other genre, other developers will come out with something.
That's John Palomarchuk, lead environment artist for multiplayer and cinematics for God of War Ascension, coming out this Tuesday, better known as March the 12th. We will have a review shortly. not this show, another show coming up in the future. The Fan Expo is coming back to town in August, not to be confused with Comic-Con, which actually is on this weekend or this past weekend, depending on when you're hearing this. And something new is coming around with this one. They're including, for the first time ever, sports. And we're a sports station, so we thought, hey, let's talk about it, Brian Calhoun. Let's talk about it. Among the celebrities coming this time...
It's no fair if you make inside jokes.
Joe Sakic, may have heard of him, Bobby Orr, Martin Brodeur, Hulk Hogan, and some guy named Joel Montana.
Also Ron Turcotte.
And Ron Turcotte.
You think they could have got somebody a little more famous? I mean, come on, if you're going to bring out the big names, why don't you bring out
I'm
some
impressed by the
names.
Depth. Ron Turcotte, the guy who rode Secretariat during, you know, that 73 year where Secretariat won everything.
By miles.
That's a deep pool.
That's a deep pool.
That's amazing that they got Ron Turcotte on.
Are you?
Yeah. I'm going to pay Ron Turcotte $50 so I can have his picture and put it beside my picture of me with Admiral Adama.
And that is really, I mean, come on. Hogan, yeah. Montana, Orr. Brodeur, Turcotte, Sakic, that's a great list. And you know they're going to add to it. That's probably not the finished list. They're probably going to add. That's just an initial, let's say, launch title list.
Let's be honest. We're excited about this, but we're sports fans already.
Yeah.
A lot of people on Twitter, not exactly too excited about this.
Why, though?
Well, let's put it this way. The people who associate with the term nerds and really embrace and accept it.
Go on.
Probably the last time that they associate with someone who considers himself an athlete, I'm going to say that interaction probably did not go very good.
Lots of locker stuffing?
Yeah, you could say that. One situation I came up in my head with was Joe Montana walking around Fan Expo just knocking comic books out of people's hands.
Well, here's the thing, and I understand that.
Joe Montana, by the way, would not do that. I just made that up.
Unlike the event in San Diego, this is not Comic-Con. It's Fan Expo. And Fan Expo means it's things that people are fans of, and people are fans of sports. So that's... And it's a good idea for them, you know. More the merrier.
We should really contact the Fan Expo guys and put ourselves out there, some sort of ambassadors, to try and bring the sports people and sort of the video game and the comic book people together.
We will bridge the gap.
Yes, we are your ambassadors.
The nerds and the jocks into one location in merriment.
It's not impossible. I mean, I'm just excited as we're going to be seeing Injustice: Gods Among Us for the fifth or sixth time in a couple of weeks. But I'm super excited about that. But you know what? I'm also super excited about Doctor Who, and I'm also super excited about NASCAR, which is a sport, and I do enjoy turning on a Bills game, you know, every once in a while and watching that when it doesn't conflict with NASCAR. There's no reason why this can't work.
Agreed.
There's absolutely no reason.
Hear, hear, Brian Calhoun. Hear, hear.
And one concern I heard on Twitter was that some people were worried that parts of Fan Expo would be taken away so that this new sports stuff can be put in. As far as it looks on their website and everything I've seen, it doesn't look like there's going to be some floor space for the sports part. It looks like it's all going to be autograph sessions, which there already are tables there for that. Q&A sessions, stuff like that.
They would never sacrifice the nerd part because that's what makes them a lot of money. So they wouldn't give that part up. That's true. No way. Still to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we got to check out something very cool, which I think you guys are all going to be really excited about because we were, and it's local right here in our city. That's all to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
You're back listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun across the table from me. I'm Momin Qureshi. Every now and then on this show, we get to do some cool stuff. And every now and then we get to do some really, really cool stuff. And that thing happened today, on the day that we're taping this show. We're invited down to the Ontario Science Centre. You may be wondering why a video game show would get to go to the Science Centre. It was to check out their new exhibit called Game On 2.0. It opens this weekend and is around until Labor Day. You definitely want to go check this out. It is an awesome, hands-on exhibit that takes you through 60 years of video game history. We heard about it first in November and thought it was a cool idea. We went down today and heard some speeches and stuff. We're like, okay, that's cool. Then we walked through the door, and it's incredible. It takes you from the very beginnings of Pong, where you can play Pong, straight through 60 years all the way up to now with Uncharted and Halo.
It even goes back a little further than that, to be honest.
Yeah, it does. It does go back further than that. And it's got everything from old consoles like the Atari Jaguar and the ColecoVision and the Sega Master System. And it's got handhelds and it's got tabletops and cabinets. And it even had this big virtual reality sphere that you can get into. And it was just such a good time to go in there. And we were there for almost 3 hours and barely scratched the surface.
It was really cool because they even had like little sections where it was all specific, where you could go in and it was, like you said, it was the Uncharted and it was Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. And then you would go and then you turn the corner and it was all those driving games where you sit in like that are at, like Dave and Buster's and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Except, of course, they were all free, so you didn't have to put in your change.
And that's the best part, is that
awesome.
None of these require money. Now, of course, you have to pay to get into the Science Center. Mm-hmm. But once you're there, imagine a sea of games, a sea of cabinets, a sea of arcade machines that you pay nothing. You just hit play and you play.
It was super cool. I like the fact that, you know, I saw some games that I hadn't seen in a while. Like, I walked in, and one of the first things that caught my eye was Pitfall.
Yeah.
Which was one of my favorite games when I was younger. And so I picked it up, and I was like, yeah, I'm all excited to play Pitfall. And I was like, this is harder than I remember it being. I don't know if it's just my, you know, you get a little older, you're not as quick on the draw with the hand-eye
coordination. No, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. You're just getting old.
It's true. And then it was, but I like that they kind of mixed all the console games together where it wasn't just, these are all the old ones, these are all the new ones. It was like, Scribblenauts on the Wii U was right next to, you know, the original Zelda, which was right next to, you know, something else. So it was all kind of like a mesh of, you could literally see where the game system went from one to the next.
Yeah, and there's one place where it's kind of like you just take turns, like physical turns. You turn right, you turn left, and you end up going around corners, and there's different display set up. And there's one area set up that has all these kind of little kids' games, like there's
educational
like a Sesame Street
games,
educational
yeah.
games. That's what they're called. And then you
they had a
speak corner.
And spell.
They
yeah,
did.
They did.
A speak and spell. I haven't seen one of those in years.
My favorite area is when you turn the corner and there's all these arcade cabinets and it's all the old ones. So there's Asteroids and Donkey Kong and Mario Brothers and just all the
Space
old
Invaders,
ones. Space Invaders.
Gauntlet.
Gauntlet. Galaga was in there.
It's not as old, but we had a really good game of NBA Jam. The original
sure
NBA Jam.
Because moment as Chris Mullin shot the lights out with the threes.
The moment kept pushing me over.
That's
it
true.
Wasn't fair. He was
you,
playing dirty.
My favorite part was Christine yelling, "That's a foul." I'm like, this is NBA Jam. There are no fouls in NBA Jam.
Do we really want to go down this road? Because I could talk about how the first quarter I was stuck playing two guys by myself.
And you still beat us.
And I still pretty much...
I beat us? I killed him with the threes in that game.
Okay, I kept it close, but I was still controlling two guys where you were controlling one person who was just doing
gonna,
3 points.
I thought you were going to start bragging about how you blew up Christine on the last lap of Daytona USA.
That was
and,
close.
And
let me
her,
tell
her,
you.
She was leading you and would have been the eternal shame even more than you bouncing a ball to Baller Beats.
Yeah.
But you did come back and destroy her on the last
lap. I knew I could not live.
No.
Like, I would never live that down.
No chance I would have
no
ever.
No chance
that
ever.
Down.
I was impressed.
It had to happen.
Because I have to say, as much as you like racing games, I like racing games a lot.
Yeah, you beat me head to head.
It's usually, I don't mean to brag, but it's rare to find someone who I can go toe to toe with in a driving game. Because in real life, I like to drive fast too. So.
Well, someday you'll be able
good.
To go toe to toe with me as well.
You are an excellent opponent. I agree that it was very enjoyable. Moment, you were just shameful.
Hey! You know what? I passed you at one point, and then I caught up to you at one point, and then you kind of cut me off, and my car literally exploded and like did like this cartwheel in the air.
I saw you
it's
coming,
like, oh.
And I slammed into you. It was
yeah.
fine.
That's how it's going
to
be.
I don't know about you, but I just feel a need to go through a sample of
sure.
a few
yeah,
other things that were here. Alan Wake, which was an Xbox 360 game, relatively new, so it shows you they're also going for some new stuff. The newest game I saw there, I believe, was Forza Horizon, which has only been out for like 6 months, which is probably the best Forza game out there, so good choice. Half-Life 2 was there. So was GoldenEye on the N64. They had two cabinets side by side, so you can go head-to-head in a little...
My favorite game ever.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to be like Moment, do some GoldenEye multiplayer. Like
GoldenEye in the temple, let's go.
In the old days, there you go. The Mario 64 game was there. The entire Nintendo crowd was there, mostly Mario games. But, you know, Metroid Prime Trilogy was also there. So was the original Metroid for the NES. The NIA Mind Control thing, which is not really a game.
That was the funniest one you were
trying to have. But it's something that's actually there. It's something you may have heard of, where they are messing around with the idea of trying to control video games using your mind. It tingled my temple. I'm not totally sure I ever got to work. And the funny thing, and I told Moment this, was that the instructions were, calibrate it so that your yellow line, because it was just a little graph on the screen that was basically two green lines and a yellow line just going up and down, up and down. And it's like, make sure that that yellow line is in between two green lines. I was not able to get it between two green lines.
Oh, no.
So I think I may actually be clinically brain dead.
Oh, fair enough.
But going back to the list, Proper the Rapper 2, Pitfall, as you said,
Breakout
Portal 2,
there,
as we said, Pro Evolution Soccer, 2012 was there. I don't remember seeing it, but it's on this list.
You're naming off a lot of new games, but really it's the old games that are the essence of this thing.
They had a track and field arcade game. They had an original Tron from like the original Tron movie,
which
Tron
was the game that you
arcade cabinet on.
That they had? The old
Can you be more specific?
Like the old. There was one game that you said that was like...
Once again, can you be a little bit more specific? I don't know. Rib Ribbon was there. I thought that was cool. I'm sorry. You really do have to be...
You said it was the game that started them all, and it was at the front of the exhibit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's called Computer Space. That's it. It's called Computer Space. It's the first commercially viable arcade game that was ever made. And if you didn't know what it was, you would assume it's a television set or something from like the 60s. It has sort of that 60s styling. But no, it was the very first one that got the whole arcade thing going and really let people know that there was a market for arcade games. So that pushed the video game industry as a whole forward. And when you think about it, it has a huge part to play in what we have today. So, yeah, I don't really want to consider it a religious experience. That might be too much for a video game. But it really was impressive just to stand in its presence. And I don't think any of that equipment works. But they do have a small selection there at the very beginning of this exhibit that's just like, here's some interesting computer hardware and arcade hardware from the late 60s, early 70s. So that was really awesome, too.
Well, we want to get a bit of a closer look, so we tracked down Patrick Moran, who is the exhibition manager for Game On 2.0, and talked to him a bit about how this whole thing came to be.
Patrick, we're standing here in this exhibit, and when we first found about it on our show in November, and we're like, okay, that'd be like a really cool thing if they did it up right and everything. And then we walked in here and my head almost exploded because it is all kinds of awesome. So how did you guys come up with the idea to fit all this awesome into one room?
It is a struggle. The project Game On is 10 years old now. And we first developed the exhibition at the Barbican Center, and we exhibited there in the summer of 2002. And it was the first time there was really a large-scale survey of the history and the culture and the future of video games. And it was a great success at the Barbican, and institutions all over the world took an interest in the project, and we started to tour it. So Game On has been really all over the globe, Taiwan, Australia, all over Europe. And this is our first time in Canada, but we've been to America before. We've also been to Brazil and Israel, like really everywhere. It's gaming now is just, it's a global fascination.
So we're on radio, so people can't see the incredible stuff that's in here. Maybe give us a bit of a verbal walkthrough of what is in this place.
Well, we really go through the whole history of video games. So we have from the very first machines like Pong and Space War and Space Invaders. We even have some things from kind of, which aren't really video games, but kind of tell the story of where they emerged from, like pinball machines. Then we have a section on the genres, like all the huge variety of games. And then we start to go into other ways of defining games. So we have like games which are like simulators of real world activities. And then at the end of the exhibit, we have our future section. And we have kind of technologies which are on the cutting edge or, you know, aren't really for like consumers yet. Like we have a huge virtual sphere, which is a virtual reality experience, 3D displays, 3D headsets, things like that.
Just standing in the middle of all this, I'm dumbfounded, which, okay, isn't a hard thing to do, I'll admit, Mullen, but you'll forgive me in this one case. It's a rather impressive sight. I just have to ask, where did you find all this stuff? Because you have items here that I didn't know still existed.
We really do depend on the generosity of the video games industry and collectors as well. I mean, there's a guy here from a Canadian company, Digital Leisure, Paul Gold, who kindly loaned to us the Dragon's Lair game we have running. And we just, those connections to the industry is how we keep the show going. And right from the beginning of the project, a lot of people at different publishers, different manufacturers really believed that, you know, there should be a museum, an exhibit of video games, because there's a great story to be told there.
Tell us a little bit about the decision to bring it to the Science Center. I mean, this is a lot of people will look at video games and say, oh, they're just games. But, you know, there's a good deal of a technological advancement here. So let's talk about why it's in the Science Center.
Well, yeah, video games. I mean, the Science Center is a fantastic venue for us. It's first time to be in Canada as well. But I think video games are really valid in somewhere like a science center because it is a application of maths and physics and, well, of science, which people interact with every day, and they're not considering it science while they're doing it. So I think it's really good to, you know, to have these sort of practical applications which aren't explicitly science.
Well, out of the mass array of things that is here, what was the best find for you guys that you guys were looking for and you finally got your hands like, yes, we got it?
I think having an original space war machine is pretty special, because we have computer space and space war, and they're really, really rare these days. It's great to have those machines. I'll just also say we've got some great independent games. We've got PS Solar, which is a Mega Drive RPG, which is released last year, and it's the first Mega Drive game in, it must be like 15 years, which is really, really good to have in the exhibition.
And do you have a favorite out of all the stuff that's in here?
I don't know. I work with it too much to maintain a favorite for more than a few minutes. There's a new game in the exhibition which during the installation I've been playing with, which is Scribblenauts Unlimited on the Wii U. And yeah, I really like that. I mean, there's really no game like Scribblenauts. It's really good fun.
Now, we've been walking around for the last, I'd say, about half an hour or so, just looking at stuff, being extremely impressed by just the diversity of what you have here. But not everything could make into an exhibit like this. There's just not enough space for the entire industry. So what's the barometer for deciding what makes into the exhibit, what should be here, and sort of what shouldn't be here?
It's a combination of factors, and to be honest, there's lots of stuff we would love to include, and there's a lot of arguments in the team about what is and isn't here. Obviously, historical significance, the firsts are really important. Technological firsts are really important. So you have the top 10 consoles, which is like the 10 generations of home consoles, which have really, you know, shaped that home video gaming experience. But also it's done on, so for instance, the fighting game section at the moment is all Street Fighter games. So we're telling the chronology of fighting games, but also of that particular franchise.
If you could speak to the people who are going to come down here and check it out over the next 6-7 months, what is it that you want them to take away after they've spent their time here?
Well, I really want them to enjoy themselves. That's really key. But Game On, I mean, personally, is about taking video games a bit more seriously. You know, not dismissing them as a fad or something for younger people. That they are really a huge part of contemporary culture. And this is a context where people can come and find like all the wide variety of games. And if they've never played games, they'll find something interesting in this exhibition, I'm sure.
That's Patrick Moran, Exhibition Manager of Game On 2.0. It is at the Science Center from now until Labor Day. I highly recommend you go check it out, especially if you're listening to this show. Probably means you're a fan of gaming, and it's definitely something you want to see. You will not be disappointed. That's all we have time for this week. For Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.